Coincidences. Coincidences. Coincidences is my topic today. Here we are sitting at the table, eating the bread we found deep, far deep in the freezer. And it's one of Rösli's bread that she has brought from Switzerland when she was here for the Easter seminar. And we were wondering why, if she had such a good time with us, why she never wrote, she never called, she never said a thing. And apparently it was the highlight of her life to visit with us. But anyhow, here we are sitting at the table eating her bread and naturally thinking of her and enjoying her in our mind and loving her. And it's the same day that she calls. Naturally, that's only coincidence, I know that. Like it was coincidence when a childhood friend of mine, Sylvia Fischer, came into my life just when I needed to get acquainted with this philosophy to get my life back in gear again. And then, after 2 years, she disappeared from my life, and I've never heard a thing or seen a thing from her anymore. But during the two most important years in my life, she suddenly appeared out of nowhere. And I know, I mean, I just know that was pure coincidence. That's just what happens, you know. I mean, like when you think you'd like to have a cup of coffee and somebody asks you, would you like to have a cup of coffee? And you think, what a coincidence. I mean, I just thought that now and she asks me, what a coincidence. I remember when I went to town once and I said to myself, today I'm going to have a nice treat when I'm going to town. At that time, the monks didn't have treat time in town. They had to create it differently. So I said, from somewhere, somehow, I get a treat. And the day passed, I was running my errands, one thing after the other, one shop, one store after the other, no treat. Lucky didn't have any cookies out and, you know, all these stores, and I didn't have to go to Price Club and what have you, no treat. So finally I go to Texaco, you know, at corner 2nd Street there. That was always the last stop before coming up the mountain again. And I'm starting to pump gasoline, and the car pulls up behind me. And who is it? Stefan, who at that time was living in Julien. And, well, he was chatting a little bit, asking some questions and back and forth. And my car was ready and I wanted to get in. And then suddenly he asked me, hey, would you like an ice cream? And I said, okay, finally I got it. I got it. Naturally, it was pure coincidence that he should ask me if I wanted an ice cream. And he has a good one too. He has a good one. Katie, she agreed to go for a blind date. And she just actually doesn't really like it, but she has promised that guy that she would go to that date. So she said, I keep that promise, I go. So the agreement was that she would wait at the corner of, you know, 2nd Broadway or whatever, and that he would arrive in a blue car and wearing a fraternity sweater. So she comes to the corner, and the moment she arrives, a blue car pulls up and stops, and lo and behold, there's a guy sitting in there with a fraternity sweater on, excusing himself for being a little bit late. And she thinks to herself, at least my date is handsome, good looking. So they go off to date for dinner first, and while they were just chatting happily together, he suddenly asked her, "How actually did you get to know Bob?" And she said, "Which Bob?" And he says, "Well, I mean, Bob who set us up for this blind date." And she said, "No, he didn't set me up for a blind date. I don't even know Bob. There was somebody else who set me up." So, wrong couple. And then he said, "You know, I'm having a good time. Do you want to continue?" And she said, happy that he had asked, "Yeah, I want to." And well, 10 years after, then they got married and had 3 beautiful children. Wrong blind date. Just, well, what would you say? Well, yeah, coincidence, I could say. But the best one, I think, is a very powerful one. That's about a guy, a businessman who once every month he goes to a business meeting and he has to drive 500 miles. He generally does that during the night because he feels just great driving during the night, and the freeways, you know, are almost empty. So he's on his way once more, but this time it's different because suddenly he feels tremendously tired. You know, it's just like he could almost not keep his eyes open open anymore. And he thought, "Nah, that's strange. That is really strange. I am so rested, and why should that happen to me?" But anyhow, it persisted, so he pulled out at the next exit, went to a gasoline station and asked the attendant there, "Are there any motels around here?" "Yeah," the attendant says, "I have a list here." So he calls. All the motels are filled up. No vacancies. "Well, maybe in the vicinity of maybe, let's say, 50 miles, there's another town." "Okay, here's a list," the attendant says. He calls them all up. All are just filled, no vacancy. So he thinks to himself, "Well, maybe a dormitory, a high school dormitory or a college dormitory." "Sorry, sir, there's nothing like that in our little town." So he already wants to go back in his car, and then he says, "Well, maybe an old folks home. How about that? They might have an empty room." The attendant says, "Yeah, I know one just down the road, and I know the owner. Let me give him a call. Maybe they have an empty room." Yeah, lo and behold, they have, and the owner agrees to give it to him for a night. And so in the morning, he all rested and happy, he talks to the owner and says, "You know, I'm not only a businessman, I'm also a rabbi, and if there is somebody in your home, you know, a Jewish person to whom I could be of service, I would love to do that." "And are there any Jews living here?" And he said, "Well, we had just one person here. Samuel Weinstein is his name. And you know what? He just died yesterday, just about at the time when you arrived here." And then they talked about the funeral, and that Samuel Weinstein was 100 years and he had outlived all his relatives and no kin, no friends around, and they were just ready to bury him on a Christian cemetery. And so the rabbi says, "Hey, you know what, I'm sure that Mr. Weinstein would like to be buried on a Jewish cemetery, and I have my station wagon with me, because normally I always drive my limousine, but this time I have my station wagon, so I could take him just along to our Jewish cemetery." And actually, that's pure coincidence too. I mean, if I think You know, what a powerful cause that Jewish guy must have put in motion, that he wants to be buried in a Jewish cemetery, and how he drew this guy to this old folks home step by step, you know. And then when that guy arrived and had his room, he died. I mean, it's just amazing how powerful our thoughts are. And coincidence, yeah, naturally, we have guessed it all along the way. There is no such thing as coincidence. Even with Rösli and eating her bread, I mean, such a powerful thought, it must have transmitted, it must have gone through to her. And that's what it is. Wherever our thought is and wherever our conviction is, there is our experience. Sometimes it seems like coincidence because we are not always so fully, powerfully aware of the causes we put in motion. Like Katie with her blind date, I'm sure that when she agreed to go to that blind date, she knew exactly that she would meet her perfect mate, however that would happen, but that cause was put in motion. And so coincidence is nothing else but powerful thought which manifests in a most miraculous way, because we have gotten out of the way and the law works its way right through to the solution. And that's what it is all about, and that's how it really works. Putting a cause in motion, thinking our powerful thought, and let it happen. And that's why I say to myself, hey, it's so important what I am thinking about, because I am right there, and right there is my experience. And so it is.
It wants sadness. Now, you know that. Why then are you ever sad? Are you inviting unhappiness?